thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Art of the Score. Tonight's guest, Tyler Bates. Mr. Bates has composed music for an impressive roster of films, including Zack Snyder's Watchmen and Sucker Punch, William Friedkin's Killer Joe, Emilio Estevez's film The Way, and Rob Zombie's Halloween and Halloween 2. Was the guitar the first instrument you gravitated towards?
Actually, no. Since I was very young, I was always listening to interesting music, let's say like a broad spectrum of music, mainly through the introduction my mother gave me to many different styles of music, you know, from Frank Zappa to Coltrane and musicals to, you know, Yes to Zeppelin. What ended up happening is I've always been drawn to music, and then I joined concert band and played saxophone, jazz band, marching band, all that stuff, and eventually I picked up the guitar on a cue from my two cousins that were into rock music quite a bit, you know, like Kiss and Zeppelin and stuff like that, and so I began playing guitar, and it totally destroyed the integrity of my musicianship.
I wouldn't say that at all.
But anyway, it's been really interesting. You know, that led to bands in high school and after, and I moved back to California ways back, and that's where I was born, to pursue songwriting and producing other artists, and, you know, essentially, I ended up with a record deal. And in the meantime, I got jobs scoring low-budget films, which really sustained me, you know, paying rent and eating and things like that.
Had you given any thought to film composition before getting those opportunities?
No, yeah. Not whatsoever. I was called initially for a favor, and that was to write some rock cues based on some timings, you know, back then. They were still working on film and VHS and all that. So I was in the studio doing an album in Chicago, and I did a few rock cues as a favor. And from there, I was asked to do a feature film by the producer on that movie. And it kind of went from one to the next. All people who knew each other recommended me to one another. And I did probably 15 in my first 3 years.
Wow.
And had no clue. You know, I don't think I met another composer, anybody who'd ever composed anything for film, so I'd done like 18 movies.
Mm.
So I was taking the Helen Keller route through the film scoring introduction.
You know what, though? I've talked to a couple of people, a couple of musicians, and I guess it's very common, that, you know, when they first entered the realm of music, they entered through jazz. And it was people like Mark Keisham and John Williams. And I'm curious, how do you think that was a useful training ground for film composing?
Well, it's interesting because I think you can spend an eternity defining all the principles of jazz music because there's so many rules to break. And I think it initially just opened my mind to the possibilities instead of, say, coming up just through rock music, which is much more of a pentatonic approach to music.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz has so many interesting voicings that are incorporated to, you know, a single progression. So that was always part of how I related to music. You know, it wasn't exactly like later in life that, you know, there was a portal that was opened up to me. It was something that I probably experienced before I actually really got into rock music that much. And, you know, so I think it's probably had a heavy influence on my style, even though I don't think my scores are jazzy. But, you know, I hear all the potential for those voicings in music, and I end up spending a great deal of time just toggling between chords, you know, when I'm writing themes.
Yeah. Well, there's also the aspect of film composing where you... you know, everyone on a film set is an assistant storyteller, and your job as a composer, first and foremost, is to give musical voice to the movie, and you need to be able to empathize with the characters and read the film a certain way in order to do that, I would think. Were you always adept at doing that, or was that a learning curve?
Oh, it's st- still a learning curve. I don't know. You know, my feeling toward music has always been emotion first as far as my response to it. I don't try and deconstruct music as I'm listening to it. I really try and just take it in. And it's the same way when I read a script or see a cut of a movie. I really just want to see what it is the director's trying to communicate or just to receive that emotion. And then I'll allow that to resonate and see what music tends to well up in me over a short period of time, because we don't usually have a great deal of time to do this job. But yeah, I'm looking to tap into that, you know, before intellectualizing anything, because I think that, you know, emotion is obviously the most important aspect of storytelling.
Yeah.
And then obviously we can, you know, sort of play with, the concept or the idiom that that is birthed from that process and maybe flesh it out using the left brain a little more at that point. But for the most part, for me, I'm just looking for that feeling that's similar to when I would put a record on for the first time when I was 6 years old. You know, there's just a certain atmosphere that consumes you when you listen to inspiring music. And I'm trying to extrapolate that from the film itself and be a component of the extension of whatever the director's thoughts are, you know, that he's communicating in his storytelling.
Yeah. And tell me about that collaboration with the director. Are most of your collaborations, are they very specific about what they want, or do you prefer a kind of a non-specificity when it comes to working with a director?
Well, some direction is great, because what that does is it tells you that the director has a sense for what they're looking for and how they want to tell the story. Now, if it's general, it's best. And then for them to allow me to create the, let's say, the minutia of what that is and the architecture of what that is, you know. Generally, I work with directors who are trusting and sometimes thrill seekers when it comes to music, so they'll allow me to, or encourage me rather, to experiment and see how we can tell a similar story differently than we would expect. And you know, those are great. You know, I'm working with James Gunn again now, and we've, with every movie, are getting closer to writing music before he films. And we did some for his movie Super, and you know, hopefully on the new project, you know, we'll just circumvent the use of a temp score altogether, you know, because there are not too many composers who are good at what they're doing and who are striving for to express new ideas in the context of a film who appreciate temp scores generally.
Right.
None of us do. So it's great when you're afforded the opportunity to really be involved early enough to create the palette for what a movie is going to sound like. And sometimes there's in post, there's a tremendous amount of time. So like when I first began working with Rob Zombie on Devil's Rejects, he had no idea what the music should be. But fortunately, we had some time. And so I had about 2 or 3 weeks to really workshop a sound that I felt was an extension of him as an artist, as well as something that would serve his film. And I think that one came out pretty good.
It really did. Yeah, that's one of my favorites of yours, actually.
Yeah, it's probably one of, if not the most disturbing movie I've ever done, one of them. And I don't really take pleasure in that, but the musical response to the movie is very much a visceral expression. It's me, you know, kind of being completely just shredded by watching that movie. It was very disturbing. It's not me sitting around with Rob Zombie watching torture movies going, oh, this would be cool. Because that's just not the way it
right.
is. It's truly emotional. Same with Dawn of the Dead and 300. You know, those were emotional expressions, you know, and the technical aspect of those scores were developed as time went on.
Well, I have a couple of questions about working in the the fantasy horror genre, which you've done quite a bit of. And you know, you mentioned temp scores, and I know those can be annoying and restrictive for the composer. But there's also this. I mean, when you've made such an impression in this particular genre, do you feel a sense of typecasting at all? Like people come to you and say, I want it to sound like the one you did for that, or have that same...
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, however, I would take the cannibalism of my own music over that of others. And mm-hmm. I think the general public doesn't understand a lot of what us composers are challenged with when we do this job. You know, I mean, sometimes you're given carte blanche to do what you like, but the reality is that there are a lot of people involved, and the higher the budget, you know, the more critical the focus is on music, because it's really the last bastion between the production and the mix of the movie. And you know, so it can be pretty intense at times. And you know, it's great when you do indie films and the directors are, you know, giving you, you know, carte blanche to do whatever you wish to do. And that's, you know, that's what we live for. You know, I mean, that's really exciting to really feel like you're creating something that's really, you know, from your heart and soul, and that's serving the movie in the best way without having ever seen the movie with anyone else's music in it that was not written for the movie, you know. But temp scores, you know, I understand why they're necessary. There's so many films now that are made that are heavily reliant upon visual effects, and in order to communicate what the movie is going to feel like and the pacing of the film, when the director and the editor first show that cut of the movie to the studio or the producers, you know, they want to tell the story as completely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have nothing but a green screen and a guy standing in front of it, then, you know, music is going to help seal the deal and help keep everyone's attention on the pacing and the storytelling. And so that's part of why I think it's very much necessary. And obviously, you know, for editors, you know, I mean, they're looking sometimes at a green screen with like one person standing in front of it with no atmosphere. So it's a way for them to continue that process when they share their work with the director. So, I mean, it's kind of gotten to the point where everyone is used to it.
It's interesting, too, because you just mentioned pacing. And I was talking to a composer last week, and he was saying that sometimes the work that you guys do is very helpful to the editor, because it will kind of accentuate problems with the pacing of a particular scene or the rhythm of a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that happens?
Well, you know, it can be rough because what happens oftentimes is, you know, now editors are generally on site during production, so they're cutting dailies into assemblies as the film is being shot. And they're working with music because they don't even have... You know, they just don't have much else to go from. And they're going to show their assembly to the director at the end of the day. And the director enjoys seeing the movie put to music. That's just the generation of filmmakers that's the filmmaking we're in now. You know, I mean, it's graduated from the MTV era to where we are now. And I understand the need for that, you know, or the desire for that. But, again, you know, what happens is the director may say, well, let's not hold that shot as long, or let's hold that shot. And before you know it, the editor may have cut to a couple pieces of temp, and they start chopping it all up. And they're like, well, the composer will figure it out. And that's why oftentimes if you were to really listen to music in movies, you'll hear, you know, a bar of 15/16 or a bar of 3/8, you know, not necessarily by design, but because you have to land the next cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the genre movies especially, we're asked to land the major cuts of the film because they're, you know, music is cut pretty tightly to the picture, and that's just, you know, that's just how the style of filmmaking is most of the time nowadays.
Well, that must be kind of awkward to write it for the particular beats of the scene, and but maybe that's not necessarily where that music would naturally flow.
Exactly. It's a great challenge. I mean, if we have time, most of us will try another tack. You know, I've written music in a completely different tempo than the temp music was when I, I'll watch it once when we spot the movie, and that's it, with temp music. So if there's anything more that the director or the editor want to discuss after that, then, it has to be in text. I don't want to hear it again. But oftentimes I'll pace a scene much differently than they've temped it, just to see if they'll look at it that way. And if it, oftentimes it works, and they'll give me the opportunity to flesh out my ideas without slaving to whatever the temp has done to the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't hear a temp, if they're cutting tight to a temp, it's manifested in the edit, and then you're hitting the cuts because you've been asked to do so, and before you know it, if you're not careful and you don't know what's in the temp, your music's lining up. So it's a challenge that we all face, but we're not living in a Pollyanna world. Once in a while we can do the indie movies where that type of pressure is not on a movie, but when you have $100 million movie, there's there are a lot of forces at work, and there's a lot of money being spent, and so there's a high amount of interest, and everyone's trying to avoid any missteps possible.
Well, when you are working in those big budget films, are there a lot of fingers in the pie? I mean, are there a lot of voices coming at you from the studios or wherever telling you, no, this isn't quite right? And is it a frustrating thing to deal with?
Sure. I have not had to rewrite much music in my career, considering all I've done, but I'm happy to hear input and notes. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is somebody comes up with a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's still my hand, my voice as a composer that is going to be, how the idea is expressed. But when there's not a consortium among the people who are giving you input, that's when it gets to be a little tricky.
Yeah.
So if the people that are collaborating are not in sync with one another about their ideas about music, and look, us composers, we're working for everybody,
right?
So we have to answer to the input of everybody that's involved.
Mm.
And what we try and do is we try and create that consortium if it's not already there, because oftentimes if there's a little tension because of the history among people, they're oftentimes not that far apart. And it's just sometimes it seems like they're further apart. So it's kind of good to listen to everybody and see what their interests are and their objective is. And then oftentimes you can incorporate all of their input into an idea and satisfy them.
Well, we'd mentioned working in the fantasy horror realm, and I would think that those films are filled with very visceral, big emotions, and that allows you to be very bold with your scores. But I would think that it would be a tremendous kind of palate cleanser to go to something with a more spiritual bent, like The Way, which I love your music to The Way as well. Did that feel like a special project for you?
Well, that's Emilio Estevez, and he's a good friend, and really, as good a person as you'd meet on a personal level, let alone working together. So when you have the opportunity to work on something of good quality with someone like him and his father, who's amazing, actually pretty most of his family worked on that movie, it was special, and it's a very inspiring film. A lot of people that I know have gone and done the Camino since after seeing the film, so that's kind of cool. Of course, it's great. There's just a different vibe when you write music for a film like that than if you're hurling a ton of bricks at the screen.
Yeah.
If the whole world is exploding, that's a different approach. It's not it's not better or worse. I mean, frankly, I'm not a huge genre guy when it comes to going to see movies or reading novels, but I really enjoy working on those movies because you can make really bold statements, and because they're oftentimes strange, it leaves a great opportunity to experiment and maybe come up with some interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, but The Way is probably more natural to me than anything I've done.
the other collaboration I wanted to know about, and tell me if I'm wrong. I read that you had only 4 days to put together the score for Killer Joe.
At the end of the day, that's pretty much how it worked out.
Wow.
But my working relationship with Billy Friedkin lasted about, the process was over the course of maybe a month or 5 weeks, but it turned out to be a great experience, and I really enjoyed that challenge of working with Billy Friedkin. He's unlike anybody else I've ever met.
And very
but,
kind of...
I mean that in a good way, because he really brought a lot to my experience as a composer. Just his knowledge is incredible, and the history that he is a huge part of as far as American cinema is amazing. So to be in the room with a guy like that and to have open conversations with him is pretty fascinating.
I would imagine so. I mean, I spent about an hour and a half talking to him for the show, and it was just, you know, there was so, I felt like we'd barely scratched the surface in that time. He was so fascinating.
Well, I feel that way too, and, you know, I saw him frequently. He's brilliant. I mean, the guy is literally, he's a genius, man. He can draw with you in detail on any topic you can imagine. So his knowledge of everything is pretty daunting.
Well, the last question I have for you, it's the one we close off all these interviews with. It's our kind of fun question. Outside of your own film scores, what would you recommend as three essential film scores?
That's interesting. I mean, to narrow it down to three, I don't know. I mean, you have to look at what has been most influential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the horror realm, there's no doubt Halloween, mm-hmm. you know, the original, which is amazing. That music sticks in your head long after you see that movie, and it does exactly what it's designed to do, so that's amazing. I tend to duck the more commercial stuff, so I would say something like the Tenant or Rosemary's Baby, you know.
Oh, I love the Tenant. Yes, yeah.
The Tenant's very creepy and interesting. I mean, more recently, I think Michael Dana did a beautiful job on Life of Pi. Like, all of his scores are,
mm-hmm.
they're all great. I think he's probably been hugely underrated in his career. But finally, you know, I think the focus will be on him in a good way. There's so many good ones. I mean, it's just, to be honest with you, it's so humbling to even have the opportunity to work in this field because there's so many immensely talented people. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I listen to scores when I see movies, but I really don't listen to them otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't grown up a fanboy of film scores.
The Halloween that you mentioned, I mean, and that is the great horror film score. And I think the key to it is, it's, I mean, horror is such a primal genre, it's simplicity.
Yeah. Well, you get that in some of the horror movies, for sure. The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I mean, I don't remember specifically what it is, but it just sounds like something's wrong.
Yeah.
And the Night of the Living Dead, you know, I think it's all library music, but I think it was transferred wrong or something, so it kind of distorted, and it just seems creepy.
Mm.
But there's so many lyrical, beautiful scores out there, you know, amazing stuff. So it's pretty intense when you start thinking about all the talented people in this line of work. It keeps you on your game for sure.
Well, I like your work very much, and you are definitely one of those very talented people. So
thank you so much.
I really appreciate you giving me time. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Art of the Score. We close tonight with a piece from Mr. Bates' score for Watchmen.